Welcome to episode 61 of the Tax Professionals Podcast. This episode is all about how to make money outside your main tax role using your tax skills, experience and knowledge.
Welcome to the Tax Professionals Podcast, the podcast dedicated to helping you improve your tax career. Here's your host, Jack Bonehill.
It's May 2021 and I'm in a holiday cottage with my friends. I'm in my room, on my phone, and I can see that I have a message on LinkedIn. I get moaned at a lot for being on LinkedIn too much as it is, and even on holiday, I can't resist. So I open the message and read it. I've been working in tax for about 6 years at this point, and doing the podcast for around a year. I've been curious a few times about ways to earn money outside of my main employment, using my tax knowledge and skills, but it feels a bit like a mysterious, hidden world. I've previously taken a look into writing magazine articles as I became interested in people who often had articles in tax magazines, and Neil Warren is one that always comes to mind. And as some of these writers do so many articles, I presume they'd be paid for them. But it turns out you rarely get paid for writing magazine articles. You do it just for the exposure, under the hope that someone would then pay you to do something else. Frustrating. But now I'm in my holiday room, reading this message, and I get excited. It's a message from a tax partner that I get on with well. He says he's unable to do some tax writing that Tollys have asked him to do now that he's a tax partner, and he asks me if I'd be interested. I message him back straight away to say that I'm absolutely interested. I do the tax writing for Tollys and get some other paid writing opportunities on the back of this, and now I do some regular paid tax writing. And I've also had some opportunities outside of tax writing since doing the Tollys work. What this experience did for me is open up my eyes to the possibilities of earning money outside of your main tax role. So in this episode, I would like to share with you three common ways that you can earn money outside of your tax role using your tax knowledge and skills. I also provide related information such as rates that you can get paid for these things and how to get offered the opportunity. So in the episode, I start by talking about paid tax writing. I then move on to paid tax webinars, training and speaking. I then move on to providing tax advice or compliance services outside of your main role, outside of your employment. I end the episode by providing some related advice based on my experiences and what I've heard from speaking to other people. Rough timings for each of these sections can be found in the details section of the episode within your podcast player or by heading on over to the show notes for this episode at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP61. And TTPP61 just stands for the Tax Professionals Podcast Episode 61. In the previous episode of the podcast, three guests joined me to talk about their experiences of tax research, along with their tips to help you improve. So, if you're actively trying to get better at tax research, or are just curious, why not take a listen to that episode after listening to this one? So that episode is episode 60. You can access episode 60, the one in relation to tax research, by heading on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP60, or you can access it in your podcast player of choice by just searching for the Tax Professionals Podcast. Each of the guests in that episode all joined me on my first tax research masterclass that I delivered, which is designed to give people the practical skills to undertake quality tax research and document their findings. Full details of the masterclass can be found at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/masterclasses. The only link that you need to remember is the link for the show notes for this episode, which is thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP61. As all the other links that I've mentioned already and other ones that were mentioned throughout the episode will be within the show notes. If, like me, you're interested in knowing what you're worth in terms of salary, then get in touch with James from the Tax Recruitment Company to benchmark what you're currently on. From his interaction with many different businesses and tax professionals, he has current knowledge of salary rates based on experience and specialism. Speaking with James would help you to negotiate a pay rise or determine it's time to find a new role. Contact details for James can be found in the show notes for this episode at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP61, or you can book a chat with him by heading on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/salary chat. So get in touch with James at the Tax Recruitment Company to benchmark your salary or discuss potentially available roles, particularly if you work in corporation tax, as he's currently recruiting for many roles in this area. Without further ado, let's get to the episode. So the first way to make money outside of your tax role by using your tax knowledge and skills is to do paid tax writing. So there's different types of tax writing that you can do. You can do articles for magazines or similar. You could contribute to books. You could write a full tax book, potentially as a co-author or with others. There's lots of different opportunities out there for doing paid tax writing. So in terms of each of those, writing articles for tax magazines, generally speaking, are not paid, but I know there are some out there. I'm not 100% sure on this because I've never done any writing for Taxation Magazine, but I believe, for example, Taxation Magazine might pay £50 for writing an article, which is better than nothing, which is what you'd get in most cases, but also equally for the amount of time that you would put into writing an article, it's not actually that much. In terms of other rates, so I've done a few different tax writing things now, so I have a bit of an idea about the different rates that kind of go out there for different types of things. So the range I've kind of seen for small pieces of tax writing can range from as little as £50 all the way up to about £400. And by kind of small projects, I mean ones that are like anywhere between half a page and 3 pages, somewhere around like the 1,200 word mark as an upper amount. And actually the £400 one, which is one I do on a regular basis. I do one article a month for £400, 1,200 words-ish. I actually think is a really good rate because the amount of time it takes me can be between, say, 4 hours and 6 hours to do. It depends on how much research I want to do beforehand to make the article better. If it's like an area that I'm not as familiar on as some other areas, if it's an area that I'm really familiar on, I can literally write that article within 4 hours. And obviously when you break it down to an hourly rate, that's £100 an hour, which I think is a good rate. And that is by far, to be fair, the best writing rate that I have seen personally for doing like small projects. I have been offered some bigger projects as well, and the rates for these tend to not be as good. So I'm not going to give names of different kind of tax publishers out there because I don't want to, I suppose, put these things in the public knowledge in case they don't want me to. But basically, for one tax publisher, they asked me to write a pretty big document on an employment taxes topic that would have been about a 40-page document, and they would pay £1,200 for this. And when I kind of thought about how long it would take me to write such a document, I thought it would probably take me about 30 hours with the research, with the drafting of it and everything, because I'm not a particularly fast tax writer, to be honest, and that's a bit because I'm a bit of a perfectionist with these things, is probably the main reason behind that. And I don't know whether there's people out there that could really whack out a 40-page document much quicker than what I would and maintain the quality, but for me it would take me quite a lot of time. So I thought it would probably work out at about £40 an hour, which wasn't a great rate given that I have limited time and there's other opportunities that I have, so I decided to not go ahead with that one. For a 20-ish page document, I have also been offered a rate of £1,800 to write that one, which is significantly better than the other one. And it's one that's on the table for me right now, actually, as we speak, and I'm thinking about whether it's going to be worth it or not, because I've got quite a few things going at the moment. But if you are just someone that's getting into tax writing, no, paid tax writing, and you need opportunities to, I suppose, practice and get your name out there, get some credibility, then taking on board all of these kind of things could be a good idea for you. Just on the kind of rates point, I have tried to negotiate like percentage of sales of whatever it is that I write, but both times I've tried that at the moment, I've had pushback. I haven't tried particularly hard, to be honest, but it seems that publishers don't really want to go down that road for whatever reason. I think it's because they see it as like a complication. But for me, having the opportunity of the, I suppose, whatever I write doing really well, I would prefer to have like a slice of income, but it's something that hasn't been possible for me yet. Kind of outside of the pay side of things, then we're doing tax writing. I think there are some other benefits as well. It's been a great experience for me, all the ones that I've done so far. I've learned a lot every time I've done it. It's definitely helped me to improve my writing and have it reviewed by people who basically write articles or edit articles and tax writing day in, day out. Those things are all great. It's essentially paid CPD, I think, where you are doing research on something as part of your article. And every time I do that, I log it, because I think it's a great way to do CPD is when you're actually working on something. For me, I enjoy doing tax research. So actually, when I am doing this research anyway, it's something that I enjoy, and I'm getting paid to do something that I enjoy. I know I'm probably in the minority camp with enjoying that type of thing, but for me, it's good. And there is also exposure that you do get from doing these things, even if it's something free. But I would say overall, for what I can tell, the exposure is very small. With the 1,200 opportunity that I had, the £1,200 one for a 40-page document, I was told that people who have done those things in the past have kind of converted opportunities into paid work on the back of it. But when I tried to like organise chats with people to, I suppose, get a feel for that and know whether it's true or not and how good it is, I just couldn't seem to get anything organised. So in reality, I'm not sure how good the exposure is in terms of winning other paid work on the back of it, but what it would do is at least put you out there for other paid writing opportunities. So how can you kind of go about getting these opportunities? So in my case, it was a story I gave at the start of this episode when a tax partner I know got in contact with me. If you know enough people or you have good relationships with certain people who do writing and stuff, these opportunities might just come to you. I think in order for people to refer you though, they need to have trust in you. They need to feel confident that you do a good job, because people don't generally want to refer people that wouldn't do a good job, because that could then look bad on them. I think one of the good ways to get these opportunities is to build relationships with people that you know do tax writing. Even maybe just tell them that you're interested and ask them if they know of any opportunities that are out there at the moment. They could point you in the right direction, or even to a person that would be really relevant to speak to. And I suppose the other thing I think is go and look out there at different tax publishers and message them directly. So for example, like Tollys, Bloomsbury's, Claritax, and other kind of things out there, you can go online and find loads of different kind of tax publishers of books and magazines and the likes, and just try and find out who the relevant person is and send them a message. So if you want to do magazine articles, paid magazine articles, you might need to message like the editor, for example. But there's not kind of like a set person, like a set job, where a person like deals with like all this stuff, from what I can tell. So it's just about sending messages to people, trying to get responses, trying to find out who the relevant person is, and then asking them and probably having some form of chat with them on the back of it. Just in terms of rates of pay and stuff, by the way, because I haven't done any writing of my own books yet or co-authoring books, I've only contributed contributed some books, and it was a real small portion of it. I don't actually know what the rates look like for writing four books. I don't know whether you can negotiate like percentages of those, or again whether it would be done on a fixed fee basis, but if you've not done any paid tax writing before, I think it's unlikely that someone's going to commission you to write a book or even do it as a co-author. So if you are interested in tax writing, if it's something you enjoy, something that you want to get into more, then definitely start with some form of articles. And if you're really, really struggling to get a paid opportunity, then I would start off with some free ones. You could contact maybe Tax Advisor Magazine or Tax Journal or Taxation Magazine, who actually might pay a small fee. I just suggest doing that in the first place to get your name out there a bit. And then when you're talking to people about wanting to write for them, you can at least tell them that you've done articles in the past and even show them. I think that could always be a good starting point. So the next thing I'd like to talk about is paid webinars, training and speaking. So in terms of the opportunities out there, you can do things like webinars for businesses like MBL Seminars and CPD Store, who do tax CPD training for tax professionals, accountants, etc. You could do face-to-face training sessions, which I suppose is similar to webinars, but the difference is that it's face-to-face instead. And you could also do things like speaking at conferences or events like ATT or COT events or Accountex and things that are similar to that. So there's lots of things you can do out there where you would either be doing webinars, training or speaking, where you can get paid for doing these things. So where I have experience so far is actually through the webinar route. So I've done one webinar for CPD Store, and in the pipeline I've got some webinars to do for MBL Seminars. So what tends to happen when you do webinars for people like this, at least from what I've experienced so far, is they will come to you and ask you to give a topic that you want to talk about and some details around that in terms of like what people who attend would take away, what's going to be covered, what's going to be learned, things like that. And then they turn that into like marketing material and kind of send it out to their, I suppose, audience, if you want to call it that, their list of people that they have that might be interested. They will deal with all the technical side of things. They will deal with getting people to join and pay and stuff. And in return for doing the webinar, you will get a fixed fee. So in terms of when you're doing these webinars, as well as writing kind of like, as well as figuring out the topic and writing like some things about what people take away and stuff, they will always need presentations from what I've seen so far, and in some cases speaker notes, which is like extra information to give to the attendees afterwards as well. In terms of rates, so the only place I really have experience at the moment is in relation to the webinars, and the rates can vary greatly. So I've seen it vary from £350 for an hour all the way to just over £1,000 for a full day. And really the rates depend on who you're doing the webinar with, depends on the amount of time that the session is going to be run for. So like an hour session, you could get £350 for it. Obviously, when you think about it, though, just know it's not £350 for an hour's work, because you've got to do the thinking of the topics. You've got to then do the material in terms of like what the topic name is, the name of the webinar, the things that are going to be covered, etc. You then have to do the presentation and potentially some speaker notes. You then have to turn up on the day, and you might have some stuff to do afterwards as well. So there's a lot of things that kind of go into it. So it is not £350 for an hour's work, just in case you were thinking that. And the bigger ones, which can be like a full day, which generally speaking is around 6 hours for things like this, you can get over £1,000 for that, which I think is actually pretty good. I have seen in some cases that there are fixed fees for doing the webinar, plus a percentage of like commission, if you want to call it that, for sales that are above a certain amount. So let's say 15 people enrolled on the session that you're doing, and they will pay you a slice of the income after 10 are brought, then you've got 5 people there where you've earned a commission. The commission is not big for marketing. I believe it's around 10% usually. So it's not huge, but it's obviously it's better than nothing. So if you're becoming really popular with doing webinars and stuff, then you can earn that on top of the fixed fee that you will get regardless. In terms of face-to-face training, I've never done any of this yet, and I really don't know what the rates would be, but I imagine they would be similar to the webinars, but you would have your expenses paid for on top of that. So in terms of speaking conferences and similar, I've never done this myself, but from people I've spoken to, you can get paid for stuff like this, but usually if you get paid, it's nothing huge. It might be like £100 or £200 for something, which is obviously better than nothing, but it's not a massive amount. In terms of speaking at conferences, they tend to sell it to you as exposure and kind of self-advertisement for, which can be okay. This whole thing about exposure and stuff, I kind of get to some extent, but it's obviously unmeasurable, really, because you don't know what you're going to get on the back of it, and nothing's guaranteed, but there is that in it too. So outside of pay, I would say some of the benefits, at least for me, are that it's going to improve your speaking and presentation skills massively. I used to be so nervous when doing presentations. When I did my presentation at uni for my dissertation, it was potentially the worst presentation I have ever given, and I sat down feeling exceptionally embarrassed. All presentations I've done since that have never been that bad, but doing some of the webinars and stuff that I've been doing now, it's really helped me become more comfortable with it. And whilst I still have some nerves, like, it's nothing compared to what it used to be, and they go away fairly quickly after getting into it. So that is definitely something that's good. It is 100% improved my speaking and presentation skills. Just like with writing, it's essentially paid CPD, where you have to do some research and stuff when creating the presentation and stuff. And like with writing, there is exposure. Again, in terms of the exposure, I would say it's better than writing, because you're actually getting people who are seeing you present for an hour. And I think when people read a book or read an article that you've written, they might not even know that you're the person that's written it. And generally speaking, I feel like talking in front of people helps them to remember you better. So personally, I think that exposure is better than in writing. In terms of the ways to get kind of opportunities and the opportunities to do these things, like with tax writing, they could just come to you through relationships that you have, where people have confidence in you and think you do a good job and stuff. But the best thing I would do is reach out to people that you know do these type of things. So you could go and like MBL Seminars website and look at some of the speakers on there and send them a message and ask them about it. You could try and find the person who's responsible for organising and giving the go-ahead on having speakers and certain webinars and stuff, or whatever it is. So definitely go down that route. To be honest, it's just very similar to the paid tax writing in terms of ways to go out there. So LinkedIn you could use as well. So I know that a post I did on LinkedIn after I did some writing for Tolly's resulted in me getting extra tax writing through a person that saw that post, and it's kind of had like a knock-on effect of getting to know more and more people, which has ended up with me being able to do webinars for some businesses like MBL Seminars and CPD Store. And actually with MBL Webinars, it was I asked a contact who I knew had done speaking for them before if she could put me in contact with them, and she did, so that worked a treat too. So there's loads of different ways that you can get these gigs, but message people directly, tell them that you're interested, and just take advantage of people that you already know that do some of these things. And if you don't know any of them, find out some people who do these things and just send them a message. In my experience, people are very receptive when you ask them for help or advice in relation to things like this. Just a reminder, to benchmark your salary, find out what you're worth, or to discuss available tax roles, get in contact with James at the Tax Recruitment Company. All contact details can be found for James in the show notes for this episode at taxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP61. So now I'd just like to talk about providing tax advice or compliance support like you would at work, but obviously doing it outside of work, having your own like little tax business, if you want to call it that. And I've kind of left this one until last because I think it's the most difficult one to do. It's the one where you're not kind of guaranteed to be paid for this, because obviously you need to find your own clients that are going to be willing to pay you. I also think it's difficult because when doing stuff like this, your employer might not want you to do it, they might not allow you to do it, or they might need to give you the go-ahead, which can be a difficulty in its own right, because if you're going out there and providing tax advice to people not through your employer, they might not want that to happen. They might think that you might try and steal clients or whatever. But that is obviously something that you'd need to get over. And if you're providing advice or compliance support, you're going to need some form of insurance and advice. You're going to have to set yourself up as maybe a business or have money laundering checks and have all those things. So there's a lot more work, upfront work, that goes into this for something that isn't guaranteed. But if it pays off and you do this well, it's going to be much more lucrative than the other opportunities. And you can, just side note, combine this with other opportunities. So you might think this one's a no-go, but I do know that someone that used to work for a Big Four, and whilst she did work there, I believe that she did tax compliance work as like a business that she set up herself for people who weren't clients of her employer at the time. And it might not have been compliance work, it might have been something else. I believe it's compliance work, but she definitely had her own kind of tax business outside of the work that she did for the Big Four. And it wasn't fully easy for her to be able to do this. She did have to jump through some hoops and stuff to get it set up. But in the end, they did kind of accept that it was okay that she did this. I imagine that it was clients that this Big Four would not be interested in anyway. And I seem to remember a silly little thing that was kind of a condition of her doing this. And it was that she could not state anywhere on her website or in her marketing material that she worked for this Big Four, which I found quite amusing because people could just Google this person anyway and see on their LinkedIn profile, say that they work there. And also it's a fact, it's true. But yeah, anyway, I found the whole thing a bit amusing. But it is possible, and if it's possible in a Big Four who are very risk averse when it comes to things like this, and it's much more difficult to be able to do these, it's definitely possible outside of that. You might work for an employer that really will not let you do this, fine. Then I suppose you have a choice. You can just not do it, or you can look for another employer that would allow you to do this if it's something that you're really, really interested in. Because if doing this goes really well, or just doing it outside of your main job, you could at some point stop your main job and just do this full time, and then you've got your own tax business. So this one, I think, is very much a risk versus reward situation, which could pay off big time if it goes well for you. But it would not be easy. Definitely would not be easy, because you're going to have to get your own clients. You're going to have to set yourself up and get everything kind of in place. In terms of finding clients, there's so many different ways you can go about this, and I don't propose to go into it in this episode because I think it's actually like an episode in its own right. And I have got some episodes out there anyway about how to win tax work, so I'll put a link to both of those in the show notes. One of them is with Mark Lee, which is a fairly recent episode, but yeah, I'll put links to those episodes in the show notes if you're interested in listening to those. One of the last things that I think you just need to bear in mind in this is the reason your employer might not be for it is because they might be seeing it as a conflict of interest that you're taking clients away from them that could potentially be theirs. And I'm going to give some related advice to this in the next section of this episode. So in this last section of this episode, I just want to give you some related advice to all the things I've talked about so far based on my experiences and things I've heard from people that I've spoken to. So my kind of word for all this stuff about earning money outside of your main role, I would refer to that as a side hustle. And the episode name might include that in. I haven't decided yet because I'm kind of debating whether enough people would know what that means, but side hustle is the word that I would use to describe earning money outside of your main employment role. So just talking about the employer's point, as I've kind of mentioned already with the setting up your own kind of firm to provide advice and compliance support, even with the other stuff as well, the paid writing and doing the webinars, etc., you're going to want to run this past your employer first and check that it's okay. And based on stories that I've heard and my own stories, they might seem unkeen at first on the idea of it because of things I've mentioned already about there seeing there being a potential conflict of interest. They might think that it's going to hinder your ability to perform as well for your employer and things like that. So there's going to be some things that you're probably going to need to reassure them in relation to and agree them to be able to do it. But some things I would definitely do is check your employment contract. Does it say anything about earning money outside of your employment or setting up your own business or something similar? Because if it does, then obviously you need to make sure that you abide to your contract. And I'd also check your HR policies as well to see if they say anything on this matter. You can always just ask HR directly if you're unsure what policies to look into, because they might even be able to answer such questions straight away. So definitely be ready to kind of understand your employer's position and be ready to reassure them that it's not going to negatively impact your employer in any way. So the person I talked about earlier who used to work for a Big Four, as I said, she couldn't actually have anywhere on her website that she worked for this Big Four, which I found amusing, but it seems such a trivial thing. And for her to be able to then go and set up the business and do it, etc., it just seemed worth it. So that's something that she did. Usually, I think your employer is mainly going to be worried about risk to them. So that could be risk of reputational damage for things that you do wrong. Let's say you do a tax article and it turns out to be wrong. That could come back and negatively impact them, and they might be worried about that. They might be worried about the fact that you're going to be spending time doing things outside of your working hours, which could tire you out more, make you more stressed and less effective at work. There's lots of reasons, I think, why your employer might not be immediately on board with this, let's say. But try and understand from their perspective what they're concerned about and work out some form of agreement together that means that both sides are happy. So that's you being able to do whatever you want to do in terms of the side gig, in terms of the side hustle, and them allowing you to do it without being concerned or worried, etc. And ultimately, you do need to accept that they might not let you do what you want to do. And you're going to have to accept that if it's the case. One thing I have heard, I don't know how true this is, but I've heard that some employers will make you do any paid tax writing through them. And if the reason you're doing the tax writing in the first place is to earn extra money, and if your employer's going to take all that money, it doesn't really make sense to do it. And if that happens, you might just decide not to do it at all. I think it's a bit short-sighted, personally. At the same time, I could understand why some employers would do that, because if it's been written by you working for your employer, then it can be reviewed by someone as part of your employer, and they can make sure that kind of reputation and any negative things that could happen on the back of that are mitigated through that review. The other thing I want to talk about is kind of time management, because obviously if you want to do any side hustles and earn money outside of your employment, they take time, and you're probably already working a long week anyway if you're working as a tax professional, and any extra work you do outside of that is obviously work on top of it, and that can be stressful and difficult at times, and you can burn yourself out a bit. And I have personally been in that position where I've taken on way too much, and then I've just regretted it, put myself through really stressful periods where it hasn't been enjoyable particularly at all. And I've learned from that, so I'm not going to do that anymore. I am more choosy with the opportunities that I take now. I take the ones that I feel like I'm going to enjoy the most. I take the ones that, I suppose, pay the best. But I don't choose purely based on what they pay. It needs to be a mixture of enjoyment, pay, and other benefits that I think I might get from it, whether it's an experience or whether it's other potential opportunities in the future. I kind of weigh up the whole thing, but I do turn plenty of opportunities down at the same time. One of the things I found best to kind of manage your time and stuff with doing things outside of your main employment is to get yourself into a habit of doing work at set times and dates. When I first started doing the podcast, I got myself into the habit of sitting down on a Monday evening, every Monday evening, about 6:30 to do an hour's worth of work on the podcast. I then did an hour on a Tuesday evening, similar time, an hour on Thursday evenings at a similar time, and then I did about 2 hours on a Saturday morning. And I set myself kind of do 5 hours max on a week and no more than that, because if I was to do more than that, I felt like it would be too much. It would make me feel stressed. It would make me not enjoy the stuff I'm doing as much. So I set myself that 5 hour limit, and I got myself into the habit of doing work on the same dates at the same times. And that for me made it easier to kind of get up and go and do it, because my body was expecting it. And then if I wasn't doing those things, I was thinking I should be doing those things now, and so I'd go and do it. And it just kind of helped from an efficiency standpoint. It helped make sure that I was motivated. It helped make sure that I didn't have too much going on at any one time. So those things really helped for me. Now I've gone down to 4 days a week with the podcast. I still do Monday, Tuesday, Thursday evenings and also Saturday mornings, but now I have one full kind of daytime as well on top of that. And so then when I'm taking on any potential opportunities, I always look at how much work I think I'm going to have on in those times and think whether or not I have the time to do it. And if I do, is it going to have a knock-on effect in other ways? Like, is it going to make me stressed? Is it going to make me unhappy potentially in that period? And is it going to impact my performance at work? And I will consider all those things before taking things on, because time is that one thing we don't get back, and we have such a limited amount of it. So I want to make sure that I'm using it wisely. And that's how I've kind of made sure that I make good use of my time and not take on too much equally. In terms of getting opportunities, there's just, I suppose, a bunch of generic things that you can do that are going to help with that. And I would kind of pick some of them and run with them, but these are just some ideas for you. And I have mentioned some of them already in different sections of the episode, but you know, you can become well known on LinkedIn, whether it's by posting regularly, commenting on other people's posts, messaging people, however it is, you can become well known on LinkedIn, and that can be a way for you to get these opportunities. You can build relationships with people, you know, particularly the tax professionals. You can build relationships with people that do the writing, do webinars, etc. That is an incredibly effective way to get opportunities. And once you've got strong enough relationships with people, you can then tell them that you're interested in stuff and ask whether they can help you out at all or whether they can put you in the right direction and stuff. But I definitely wouldn't start with those things, because people will see it as like, well, this person's just trying to use me potentially, or it's a bit like a sales message that you get sometimes when people add your LinkedIn immediate sales message. That's just not what you want to get from people. So just be careful with that though. But building relationships with people is a very good way to get opportunities. So you can message people directly on LinkedIn. You can send them emails. Maybe you might meet them in an in-person networking event. Take advantage of all of these things. And the last thing, which I think is probably the most important one for me, and I think it's definitely contributed to me getting more opportunities, it's making sure that you do a good job of absolutely everything that you do. So if you get a paid writing opportunity, make sure that it is to a very high standard. And if you do that, I think people are more likely to ask you to do more for them and refer you on to other people. And it's something that I would always do. I would always make sure that whatever I produce is what I would consider to be excellent, at least in my view, and to a high quality. Just back onto the time management point, I just want to leave you with this, because I do think it's important. Be picky with the work or the opportunities that you take on. You know, once your foot is in the door, once you've had a few opportunities and you've got a lot coming your way, make sure that you're picky, because there's plenty of opportunities out there. Some will be more suited for you, some that you'll enjoy more, some will be better paid. Try and find those opportunities and take the ones that are the right fit for you. Do not take everything on board, because you will, trust me, make yourself feel stressed, and you will probably make a period of non-fun for you in your life. Unless, of course, you absolutely just say love tax writing and you could do it all day, every day, which I think probably most people are not in that boat, particularly when there's deadlines and stuff at work and pressures there and potentially working extra hours there. You don't want to do too much, in my view at least anyway. And really, I would just say if you've got an opportunity and you look at it and you don't feel excited about it or your heart isn't in it, just turn it down. It's not going to be worth the energy that you pump into it if it's not going to be something that you're that interested in. So just in summary then for this episode, I would say the key opportunities to earn money outside of your main tax role are tax writing, tax webinars, training and speaking, and then also providing tax services, which could be advice and compliance to your own clients. And this is just what I think are the key things, but there's plenty of other opportunities out there as well, particularly if you're creative about it. There's definitely loads of opportunities out there with tax writing and tax webinars, training and speaking, but the rates can vary a lot. The kind of third one about providing tax services, advice and compliance to your own clients is more difficult up front. You're not going to see a return on your investment quickly, but there is a lot more potential for you there. So it's kind of risk versus reward situation. It will be more lucrative if you put in the effort and it pays off, but it's obviously not guaranteed. Whatever kind of side hustle or paid opportunity outside of your main employment that you go ahead with, make sure that your employer is okay with it first and work with them to make sure that they are happy with how it's happening. And this is just going to save potential issues down the line and kind of a headache further down the road. Make sure you manage your time carefully and get into habits of when you're going to sit down and do this paid work outside of work. And just make sure that you don't overstretch yourself, because if you do that, bad things will happen, in my experience. And once your foot is in the door, make sure that you do an excellent job with every piece of work that you do, so that you can get asked to do more in the future and increase future opportunities. So that's it for this episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. All links mentioned throughout the episode can be accessed in the show notes for this episode at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP61. Why not take a listen to the previous episode of the podcast, where three guests join me to talk about their experiences of tax research along with their tips to help you improve. A link to this is in the show notes. And if you're interested in improving your tax research skills, then why not take a look at my Tax Research Masterclass, which is designed to give people the practical skills to undertake quality tax research and document their findings. Full details can be found at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/masterclasses. But that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed the episode and have taken away some useful points to help you to progress, develop, and improve your tax career. Until next time.